Good afternoon and welcome to Parsha Perspectives on Parshas Vayechi. I'd like to share a thought that speaks about how Hashem deals with us and maybe how we could look at dealing with Hashem, but also how we look at dealing with other people because of how we interact with Hashem. And this thought goes as follows. If you look through Torah, all of Chumash practically, you find one value in the Torah that has completely been shortchanged, that completely lost its glory. And that's the value of Bechorah. From the very dawn of history, the very first Bechorah, Cain, is rejected in the face of Hevel, his younger brother. By Noach, we don't really know. It's the best son, the shame, doesn't seem to be the Bechorah. Among the Avos, Avraham was not the Bechorah. Yitzchak was chosen above Yishmael, who's the Bechor. Yaakov was preferred to Esav, who's the Bechor. In this week's Parsha, Parshas Vayechi, we have two examples of the Bechorah lost. Reuven loses his Bechorah to Yosef. And Ephraim, the younger of the two sons of Yosef, who's younger than Manasseh, he gets the Bechorah of Yaakov when Yaakov switches his hands and gives the Bechorah to the better bracha to Ephraim, the younger son. Moshe Rabbeinu, he's chosen over his older brother, Aaron. And most significantly, the entire Bechor population are replaced in the service of Hashem by the Levim, right? The Levim were supposed to do the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash, and because of their Chet HaEgel, the Bechorim were pushed aside because the Bechorim were Chotei Chet HaEgel, and the Levim were chosen in their stead. And there's a beautiful Kliyakar who talks about this episode in our Parsha where Yaakov crosses his hands and Yosef says, no, you're all mixed up, Daddy. And Yaakov responds to his son saying, Yadati bini Yadati. And then Yaakov says, Gam hu yigdav, gam hu yel'am. Did you notice the double phrase that Yaakov tries to let Yosef know, don't worry, I'm not confused? Yadati bini Yadati. Why does it say twice? Gam hu yigdal, gam hu yela'am, when he's talking, don't worry, Menashe will also be, he'll also be. Yaakov says the Kliyaka, Yaakov is trying to be merames, to hint to Yosef. I'm very aware of this idea of a Bechor, of the double portion of a Bechor, of the concept of Kefel, that he gets the double portion, Pishnayim. Yadati bin Yadati, gam hu yigdal, gam hu yela'am. I know that he gets double, I know that. But I want you to know that I want to give my bracha to the small one and listen to why. Says the Kliyakar, Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bocher B'Yoser K'tanim. Hashem always chooses the smaller person. Hashem always lifts up the underdog. Says the Kliyakar, anybody who has a tzad katnus, who has that aspect of being small, HaKadosh Baruch Hu elevates him, makes him great. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates. It doesn't focus on the big and the grand. Hashem focuses on the small, the underdog, the vulnerable. That's who Hashem wants to elevate in Hashem's eyes. That person is truly great. That's an incredible idea that the Kliyakar shares. But I want to focus on this idea of what is really the status of the Bechorah after Yaakov switches his hands. Two questions that I'd like to present to you this afternoon. Number one, we just went through just about every Bechorah status in Chumash, and we found that every which one, the Bechor lost his Bechorah, and we didn't really follow the real Bechor. And more importantly, the shift from the Avodah of the Bechorim to the Avodah Salavim. So apparently, the Bechorim lost their status. The Levim were chosen in place of the Bechorim, for whatever reason, because the Bechorim, sinned in the Avera of Chet HaEgel, the Levim didn't. Then I ask you a question. If the Bechorim were pushed aside, were cast aside, because they were involved in the Chet HaEgel, and the Levim replaced them, then how come there is still what we call Kedushas HaBechora? The Bechor still has Kedusha, and I'll prove it to you. There's still a mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen. Pidyon HaBen, to be poda the Ben HaBechor, exists even though the other aspect that the Bechor should be the firstborn and therefore carry the mantle of service of the Beis HaMikdash, that we threw out, but yet we still have this Kedushas HaBechor remains, so much so that every Bechor who's born has to be redeemed from the Kohen, has to do Pidyon HaBen. But if the Kedushas Bechor was stripped from the Bechorim, then why does Pidyon HaBen for a Bechor remain? That's question number one. Question number two is on the words of this week's parasha. When Yaakov Avinu crosses his hands. Yosef had put the, one son, Menashe, over here and Ephraim over there. And Yosef arranged it that the Menashe, the elder, would be next to Yosef, next to Yaakov's right hand, and Ephraim, the younger, would be next to Yaakov's left hand. And then what does Yaakov do? Of course, Sikeles Yadav, he crosses his hands. Ki Menashe HaBechor. What? Ki? Because? Because Menashe is a Bechor, that's why Yaakov switched his hands? To the contrary. Yaakov switched his hands, he took his right hand off Menashe and switched it, not because Menashe is a Bechor, but despite the fact that Menashe was the Bechor. Even though Menashe was the Bechor, he still switched his hand for some reason. And all the Mefarshim are bothered by this. Why does it say, because Menashe was the Bechor, that's why Yaakov switched his hand? It should be despite or even though. So Rashi says, the word ki always means because. But here in this pasuk, you're right, it doesn't mean because. It means that Yaakov switched his hand despite the fact that Menashe is the Bechor. But I want to share with you a chizkuni, beautiful chizkuni, who explains this phrase of sikeles yadav, that he crossed his hand simply, literally, and so beautifully. Says the chizkuni the following. What Yaakov did was sikel yadav. Sikel not doesn't mean to cross, it means with seichel. He intelligently moved, intelligently adjusted his hands. Why? What was the intelligence there? You see, if Menashe is here and Ephraim's here, and I know I'm opposite you, so my left is your right and my right is your left. If Menashe is over here and Yaakov really wants to switch the brachas, what should we have done? We should have taken Menashe, lifted him up, moved him to the other side. And take Ephraim, the younger, and lifted him up and put it in the elder position. But Yaakov knew that that would embarrass Menashe. Yaakov knew that if they would actually be asked to switch where they're standing, that would be embarrassing to Menashe. And Yaakov didn't want to embarrass Menashe. Yes, he wanted to switch the brachas, but he didn't want to embarrass Menashe. Why? Because Menashe is the Bechor. He shouldn't be embarrassed and made to move to the lower position. And therefore, Yaakov left each one where they are standing, each one standing in his own position, and therefore he merely switched his hands and not switched their positions. Why did he not want to switch their positions? Sikeles yadav. He only switched his hands. Ki Menashe ha-Bechor, because Menashe was the Bechor, and he didn't want to make him feel bad. So therefore, he didn't move Menashe. What a beautiful explanation. He crossed his hands. Why? Why did he cross his hands? Because Menashe the Bechor. That's why he only crossed his hands and didn't actually move Menashe from the Bechor position. What a beautiful idea. Not to pain or cause of embarrassment to Menashe the Bechor. Therefore, Yaakov decided to only switch his hands. The Magen Midubna expands and expounds on this idea. And he presents something, a little bit of a different twist, but it's following a similar theme. When you have wealth allocation, if you want to increase your share, let's say you want to have more stocks, then you have to take away some of the assets in the bonds to put more in stocks. If you want to shift out of stocks into bonds, you have to take away some money in the stocks, put into the bonds. If you want to add one area, you have to subtract the other. If you want to subtract from one area, you add it to the other. So too, in a Yerusha, if a parent wants to give more of a Yerusha to one child, they have to diminish the Yerusha that will go to the other child. You could only have, if you only have a certain amount. That's like, in science, there's a law in physics, there's a law of conservation of matter. There's a certain set amount, and that's what is. And you could change the forms of that matter, but it's going to be a set amount. You can't have more. If you add one here, you have to detract one from there. Says Magen Midubna, Hashem does not work like that. Hashem could give one person extra while not taking away an iota from the other. Hashem is not limited by the laws of physics. Hashem is not limited by the law of conservation of matter. Hashem could increase one person's share while leaving the share of other people intact. The beautiful Lashon, the Gemara in Chulin, Hashem said, one of the Amoraim says, Elaka didon, our God, mehev yayv, he gives. He doesn't take away. He doesn't take away. And this point is veiled in the Medrash Rabbah, when the Medrash Rabbah talks about our very question that we asked, how come the Bechorim lost their Kedushas Bechor? They no longer will be in charge of serving the Beis HaMikdash, but yet they still have, their Kedusha still remains. There's still a halacha that we have to redeem and do the Pidyon HaBen. The Medrash says, you might think that because the Bechorim did the Avera of Cheta Egel and they lost the Avod, you might think that maybe they also lost their Kedusha. Absolutely not. Says the Medrash, Hiktash Dili, says the Pasuk, Kol Bechor B'Yisrael, Li Yihiyu, they will be to me forever. Meaning even though they were chote b'cheta egel, they didn't lose their status. They lost maybe a little bit of the avoda, but their status of being kadosh, their status of being a bechor and being needing the pidyon haben, that remains forever. So yes, Hashem wanted to reward the Leviim, to give them the avoda, but for Hashem, rewarding one does not mean stripping the Bechorim of their Kedusha. To the contrary, Leviim are elevated, but the Bechorim do not have to be demoted. They still maintain their Kedusha, they still have that Kedusha that requires Pidyon HaBen, which is the halach that emanates from that Kedusha. And that's the Magen Midubna, is precisely the conversation that happened between Yaakov Avinu and Yosef in our parsha. What happened? Yosef sets up the two boys in front of him. Yaakov Avinu sees, he knows who's who, he knows who the Bechor is, he knows who the younger one is. And Yaakov switches his hands. Yosef realizes that, I guess Daddy Yaakov Avinu, I guess Beruach HaKodesh, you have determined that Ephraim, the younger son, deserves the Bechorah. And if so, instead of me, you know, instead of switching your hands, Daddy, let me reposition the boys. So that instead of crossing your hands, you could just simply put your hands straight out, and the younger one will be on your right, and the older one will be on your left. Let's just move them one to the other. To which Yaakov responds, no, don't move them. Right? The Chizkuni said something different. Chizkuni said, don't move them because I don't want to embarrass Menashe. But the Magen Midubna is saying something beautiful, something different. Don't move them because, just because I'm switching the Bechorah from Menashe to Ephraim, Menashe, the Bechor, is not going to lose out on any brachas coming his way. You don't have to move Menashe out of his position. Leave him in his position because he's not going to lose an iota. If I choose, or if Hashem is directing me to give an additional bracha to Ephraim, you don't have to remove Menashe from his place as if to say you're not getting what's coming to you. No, no, no. Hashem is not governed by the laws of conservation of matter. Hashem could give more bracha to Ephraim, but still not make anything be lost to Menashe. And therefore leave Menashe exactly where he is. I will merely, says Yaakov to Yosef, I'll merely cross my hands, leave Menashe, he'll get everything he's supposed to get. I want to give more to Ephraim, so I'll take my right hand and I'll put it on Ephraim's head, but leave Menashe where he is, don't move him from his position. See, Kelas Yadav, why does Yaakov switch his hands? Because Menashe HaBechor, Ki Menashe Kelas Yadav, Ki Menashe HaBechor. That's what the Torah is saying, that Yaakov Avinu is saying, don't switch his position. Don't move away from where he's standing, because he's going to get everything that's supposed to come to him. I'm just going to switch my hands because Menashe is a Bechor, and he has to stay there. So I'm just going to switch my hands. I'm not going to move him. Sikelas Yadav, Yaakov switched his hands because Menashe is the Bechor. You know, this beautiful Pasuk in Mishlei that echoes the same idea. Pasuk in Mishlei says, Birkas Hashem hita ashir. The bracha of Hashem makes a person wealthy. That makes sense. Velo Yosef Eitzev ima. But it doesn't add any sadness with it. You know, sometimes when one person becomes wealthy, it's at the expense of somebody else. But here, when it comes to Hashem, the bracha of Hashem, Hashem could give bracha and everybody become wealthy at nobody's expense. You know, this perspective, I think, is such a valuable lifelong perspective of looking at how to look at other people. When we look at other people, we don't have to be jealous at other people. We don't say, oh, they got this, it means I'm getting less. Somebody's making a simcha, you don't have to think, oh, they're making a simcha, their family's making a simcha, I don't get to make that simcha, I don't have that bracha. No, 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 you'd be happy for other people. They're making a simcha, their bracha and parnasa, their whatever the good things that they have, doesn't take an iota away for what Hashem has in store for me, for ourselves. And therefore we could happy. My competitor is doing well in business, I could be happy for them. Because my competitor's success, if Hashem runs the world, doesn't come at my expense. Hashem gives me what I deserve. Hashem gives me what I'm supposed to have coming to me. And that has nothing to do with somebody else's bracha, somebody else's success, which gives us the opportunity to be a little bit looser, to be a little bit, we could let go a little bit. I don't have to be jealous. I don't have to be worried what other people have. I know that I have exactly what Hashem wants me to have. And I could be so happy for other people to have other things. Other people have bracha in this and bracha in that and bracha in that. I could be so happy for them because I know they're having those brachas. Doesn't detract from whatever bracha is coming to me, whatever brachas I deserve, not an iota. That's the thought that I wanted to share with you this afternoon. So I want to actually, that's the end of one thought. I'd like to share one additional, a different idea a different thought. So the first one was more about being able to appreciate what other people have and not feeling bad about what I have and not compare myself to other people. I'd like to share with you another idea, totally unrelated, a new point. I made a shahakal earlier. We find an interesting conversation, again, another conversation between Yaakov and Yosef in the beginning of Vayechi. Yaakov is trying to convince Yosef to... Yaakov doesn't want to be buried in Mitzrayim for numerous reasons. Rashi enumerates four reasons or so. But he says, as the Pasuk says, when I was traveling, Mesa alai Rachel, your mother Rachel died, and I had to bury her along the way in Kever Rachel, right near Beis Lachem. And the simple reading of the Pesukim are very difficult to understand. Yaakov's just saying, do me a favor, we're in Mitzrayim now. Yosef, do me a favor, please bury me in Maras HaMachpelah. Why does he go into this history lesson to say, your mother is buried in Kever Rachel? So Rashi's comes to explain, because Yaakov realizes that Yosef's going to be angry. Yosef's going to be bitter. Like, what do you mean? You want me to bury you in Maras HaMachpelah, but you buried mommy, you buried Rachel in Kever Rachel, you didn't bury her in Maras HaMachpelah? So that's why this pasuk is coming to explain. Yaakov is telling his son Yosef, please bury me in Maras HaMachpelah. I don't want to be in Mitzrayim. You want to know why I didn't bury your mother, Rachel, in Maras HaMachpelah? Why I buried her on the side of the road in Beis Lechem and Kever Rachel by herself? That's simply because she died along the road. And we were traveling, we had no option. It happened along the road, there was nothing we could do. So I had no choice. But please, even though I didn't do what I'm asking you to do for me, I didn't do that for your mother, but please, nevertheless, please bury me in Maras HaMachpelah. But can I ask you a question? I understand that that's what happens. That's what happened. That was the history. But how is that excuse a consolation for Yosef for the fact that Rachel Imenu is not buried in Maras HaMachpelah? I mean, Yosef could say, well, just like you buried mom where she died and it was inconvenient to take her to Maras HaMachpelah, so daddy, you, Yaakov Avinu, you dying in Mitzrayim, so it's inconvenient for me to take you to Maras HaMachpelah. Why is it any different? Just like you didn't bury my mother in Maras HaMachpelah, why should I bury you in Maras HaMachpelah? What is Yaakov gaining by telling Yosef, his son, please bury me in Maras HaMachpelah because I buried your mother in Kever Rachel? I saw a colleague of mine, Rabbi Yaakov Haber, quoted Rabbi Herschel Schechter, who said a beautiful idea. He said that there is a very specific consolation to Yosef by saying that I buried your mother in Kever Rachel, and therefore please bury me in Maras HaMachpelah. You know why? Because there's a common denominator between the two. What makes Maras HaMachpelah so special? Why is Maras HaMachpelah the place to be? Why is Maras HaMachpelah so unique, so elevated, so kadosh? The answer is because that's going to be a makom tefillah for all of history. It's the fact that Maras HaMachpelah is a makom tefillah that's what makes it a special place. And let me explain. We know from the very beginning of Jewish history, when even before the Klal Yisrael entered Eretz Yisrael, they send the Meraglim. Kalev goes and he goes, Vayalu Banega Vayavo Ad Chevron, it says Vayavo Ad Chevron in singular form. Kalev went where? He went to Ma'aras HaMachpelah to Davin, that he should be successful in countering the Lashon Hara of the Meraglim. So even before Klal Yisrael entered Eretz Yisrael, Kalev goes to Davin there. Fast forward 1,000 years, we have a fascinating Gemara in Bava Metzia. It tells us the story that in the Beis Medrash of Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, in the year, I don't know, 150, 250, somewhere around there, around the year 200 of the Common Era, Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi had his Beis Medrash. And Eliyahu used to come to that Beis Medrash. What that means, I think, I don't know, the Maral, Marashah says, that he used to offer a clarity to the people learning that Beis Medrash so that they could understand more deeply and more thoroughly. And then one day, things were so difficult to understand in that Beis Medrash. Eliyahu hadn't come to the Beis Medrash that day. And Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi meets up with Eliyahu HaNavi and says, why didn't you come to our Beis Medrash? And he says, well, I was so busy, I had to go to Maras HaMachpelah, I had to wake up Avram Avinu and get him ready to daven and let him daven for Klal Yisrael, and then I had to put him back to sleep, and then I had to go to Yitzchak Avinu and wake him up in Maras HaMachpelah and prepare him for davening and put him back to sleep, and then I had to go to Yaakov Avinu and I had to get him prepared for davening for Klal Yisrael and put him back to sleep. I wasn't available to come to your Beis Medrash today. What do you see from that? There are beautiful lessons in that story which we're not going to go into, but you see that even the Avos themselves are davening for Klal Yisrael. 1,000 years, 2,500 years after they themselves have died, they're davening for their children at Maras HaMachpelah. Even today, Maras HaMachpelah is a makom to daven. Well, that's the godless, says Rav Shechter, of Maras HaMachpelah. And what does Yaakov tell his son Yosef? You know what? I buried your mother, Kevah Rachel. We know what Rashi says. Why was Rachel buried on the road? Because there's going to come a time when Klal Yisrael are going out to Golis and they're going to cry out to Mama Rachel, please save us. And Rachel Imen, of course, we know the Medrash is going to go to daven for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, save Klal Yisrael. And Hashem is going to answer the tefillos of Mama Rachel. That's going to be the Makom Tefillah. Until today, Kevah Rachel is, of course, the Makom Tefillah. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu is telling his son Yosef, Yosef, I buried your mother. I know I didn't bury her in Maras HaMachpelah. But what's the big deal about going to Maras HaMachpelah? You want it to be a Makom Tefillah? Guess what? Kevah Rachel is also going to be a different kind of Makom Tefillah. And therefore, it's a Makom Tefillah for Rachel. Rachel herself stands up for Klal Yisrael, her children, as we go to Golis. Klal Yisrael, we go to Kevah Rachel even nowadays to daven, Beis Tzara. And therefore, Yosef does not need to feel resentment over the slight of his mother's honor, because her kever, her burial place, is going to get the same purpose, has the same purpose as Maras HaMachpelah, where Yaakov is asking to please be taken. You know, you see that there are two types of Makom Tefillah. You have the Maras HaMachpelah and Kevah Rachel, which is one type, and you have the Beis HaMikdash. Ki Beisi Beis Tefillah Yikarei L'chol HaMim. The Beis HaMikdash is a Makom Tefillah. There are two different types of Makom Tefillah, because there are two different types of Tefillah. Let me tell you that there are two types of tefillah. There's the daily tefillah that we daven every day. We daven shachar, we daven minch, we daven marv. And there's a separate genre of tefillah be'es tzara. When a person's going through a hard time, when there's a tzara, when somebody's sick, when somebody's going is in trouble, they pour out their heart to Hashem because of their trouble. That's a separate genre of tefillah. And the two types of makom tefillah correspond to the two genres of tefillah itself. The Beis HaMikdash, that place that's a B'ki Vesi Beis Tefillah Yikarei L'chol HaMim, that Beis Tefillah that is the Beis HaMikdash, that represents the Dveili Tefillah. Tefillah is Keneged Karbanos. You have a Karban Tamid in the morning, a Karban Tamid in the afternoon. Every day, the same thing, every day. That's one kind of Tefillah. And the Beis HaMikdash is the place, is the locus for that type of Tefillah. And then you have a different genre of Tefillah that has a different makom. Maras HaMachpelah, Kevah Rachel, the tefillah that our avos poured out to Hashem when we were in trouble. When we were in trouble in Golis, and when we are in trouble, we go to Maras HaMachpelah, Kevah Rachel. That's a different kind of place. And it's a different kind of tefillah that is poured out in those different places. That's the parallel between the Beis HaMikdash and tefillah, the regular daily tefillah, as opposed to Maras HaMachpelah, Kevah Rachel, and tefillah Beis Tzara. My friend, Rabbi Yaakov Haber, points out that in our davening, we have built in both of those models into our own davening. Even though we're 6,000 miles away from the Beis HaMikdash, from Maras HaMachpelah, from Kevah Rachel, Chazal fashioned for us, in our Siddur, both models, both genres of tefillah. We have our Shmona Esrei, our daily Shmona Esrei, same 18 brachas, same Shmona Esrei every day. But then twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays, we have Vehu Racham. Vehu Racham, the tefillah Vehu Racham is devoted to tefillah be'es tzara for the entirety of Klal Yisrael and Golis. That's what Vehu Racham is all about. There's a fascinating history of Vehu Racham. It's quoted in the Siddur Otzar HaTefillah, it's quoted from Medrash, which I wasn't able to find, that describes the history. I don't know when this history was. This is from the time of the Roman times, from the time of the Amoraim, the time of the Gaonim, the time of the Rishonim. I don't know when this event happened, but this is the history that is behind Vehu Racham. There was a king who very much disliked the Jews. And he took three great Talmidei Chachamim from the Jewish community. One was named Rabbi Shmuel, one was Rabbi Binyamin, one's name was Rabbi Yosef. We have their names. And he basically put each one on a boat without a captain and just sent the boat out to sea. And each one ended up on some other desert, you know, some other deserted or not deserted, some island somewhere, some landmass. And they sat down and each one wrote a tefillah calling out to Hashem to please save him. Time passed, and a new king, I guess, Vayakom el Chadash al Mitzrayim, a new king came that was a little more favorable to the Jews, and eventually he discovered these three Talmidei Chacham, brought them all back to where they came from. And the three Talmidei Chacham met up with one another. They realized they each had composed a tefillah. They put this tefillah together, each one of the three sections, one section that one had written, Rabbi Shmuel had written, the section Rabbi Binyamin had written, and the section Rabbi Yosef had written. They compiled it, and that is the Vehu Racham that we know today. And they sent this Vehu Racham tefillah to the Jewish community all around the world. And that's why the Siddur Otzar Tefillos points out that each one of the three sections of Vehu Racham has 18 references to the name of Hashem. 18 Azkaros. You know why? Because this is corresponding to the 18 Brachas of Shmona Esrei. Just like there's 18 Brachas of Shmona Esrei, so too each of the sections of these three sections of Vehu Racham are parallel to that regular tefillah, the daily tefillah. And that the Levush, one of the Achronim on the tour in Hanahalacha, also explains that Vehu Racham is supposed to be said standing. Vehu Racham is supposed to be said silently. Vehu Racham is said right after Shmona Esrei because it's supposed to be like a different model. It's a different model of Shmona Esrei. It has these similarities of 18 mentions of Hashem's name in each of the three sections and standing and silent and right adjacent to Shmona Esrei because it has the model of Shmona Esrei, but for Galus, for times of Tzara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should answer all of our tefillos. Hashem should answer the different genres of tefillah. Hashem should answer our daily tefillos. And Hashem should answer our tefillos that we offer to Him Be'ez Tzara. Hashem should give us the opportunity not only to daven Be'ez Tzara in the makom of in the Maris Machpelah and in Kever Rachel, we should be zocha to daven without an Eitz Tzara, with simcha, with joy, with celebration, Be'ez Hashem, very speedily in the Beis HaMikdash as well. I want to thank everybody for joining today.